Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Masonic Effects. You found us, we found you. The place where Masons can congregate and put their feet up and relax or listen, tap into the ongoing conversation, the conversation that never stops. In between the warm greeting and hospitality, this is what we do. Good morning. Here it's the 159th, the day of the year in this part of the world, and we only have 209 days left. I mention that because it's important that we use our time wisely and enjoy as much as we can, and that, my brethren, is a matter of choices, and that is what we're going to be talking about this morning. There's only 15 days left for to the solstice. All you borderline druids out there will we wanted to pay a special attention to that phenomena. I can't wait because now, for the very first time, I've discovered how many days there are in summer. You would think that somebody would reach this age and say, well, you know, I wait for summer here, and without knowing that it's 93 days, 15 hours, and 47 minutes long. And that, you know, it's amazing. Fall begins in 99 days. So what I'm talking to you about is a little nod. Move ahead. Don't be thinking. Where did you ever get the notion that your feet were encased in concrete, and that all of the events of your life were passing you by? Where in the world did that idea ever originate? And really, gentlemen. What do you use to validate that? What evidence do you have to suggest that that idea is in any way valid? I suggest to you that it's a matter of habit, a matter of routine, a matter of the utter boredom that can happen to a craving, inquiring mind when it doesn't ask the questions. Here we're going to get into the mood today. I digressed last week into some foolishness, and I'm allowed to do that every so often, as you are. The commentary today, I think, is I found it riveting. I like my own jokes, so I'm no judge. Answering why is key to successful expansion. We're going to talk about that idea of expansion within the framework of Masonry, and I'm particularly don't let me forget today. I need to talk to you about why the mesh that we use, the size of the mesh that we use is so fine. Mm-hmm. Why we aim so close to the end of our own nose. That's about the level of insight that we seem to be very confident with. This is more descriptive than a comment. The collective, don't you be so stern with me already. If we get stern with each other at this point in our time, it makes us all look ridiculous. This is a place where we're gathering. Now, listen to a little bit of this. This is Astrid Gilberto. Some of you will remember her when she was just a young thing. And she's no longer with us. But she's left this remarkable voice. And when we come back, we'll get into answering why. One of those big, big, big secrets. Just gotta love it. Did I key this one up? Nah. Here's a little bit of Charlie Bird playing it. Check this out. This is done just a few months before Mr. Bird passed away. Kind of remarkable. Thank you. thought that was worth a listen, don't you? It's one of the greats that was with us for such a short period of time. It's one of the reasons I want to speak to you about answering some questions. Does Freemasonry ever truly expand? We use that term as if measuring the number of people in our lodges is the key to a successful organization. And from what I can tell, from what my seniors are identifying, it's not going so according to expectations. You know, the interesting notion about this is that the brightness of Freemasonry never diminishes. Did you notice that? We, I think, are looking no further than the end of our nose at what's going on, in a way, respectfully. We're trying to understand this part of Masonic history. And without referring to the perspective of 400 years, amazing that we would attempt it, but amazing that we would expect to have any sense with our nose pressed up so close to the glass that we can't see the picture. We can't see our nose is right up against the canvas, and we're looking as hard as we can. And we still can't see it. Freemasonry, I protest, doesn't grow, nor does it contract. The reasoning and logic, careful social analysis and awareness is subtle. It isn't revealed until an individual asks the essential questions. What are they, you ask? They come from your examination of your life. We know when this occurs because it is like an outburst in a lodge that endures. Unless a man is really well schooled in Masonry and has learned to control his emotion, like Socrates standing in one spot that day in the rain, pondering and pondering, and a crowd gathered around him just waiting. And that's all he did. He had to stop and think his way through a problem, a process. And I suggest that when that happens with a member of a lodge, often it's not isolated, but this fellow will have had the joy of dialogue. I don't mean the misogynist, homophobic nonsense that we sometimes see, or the tempers. Oh my goodness! Like get control of yourself, boys. You know, that is the nose pressed right up against the canvas. I'm inclined to think education in the Masonic fashion is the product of self-driven curiosity. If history teaches nothing else, it is that education achieved can never be taken away from a man or any person. Greek thinkers were first to come out of the darkness by developing insight into the mind. The richness of money, property, and power were exposed for their weaknesses when the Socratic method developed insight. When the Socratic method questions to prove the ignorance of the one pontificating, showing knowledge was true power, and revealing ignorance along the pathway of life. That was the gift that Socrates gave to us. And how often have we heard our own values on that struggle against the utter ignorance, the battlefront. Freemasonry does quite well in our narrow halls, hunched around a table with a little food, a little wine, and friends. Have you noticed how we go about building interest in the craft? Historiography? Metaphoric acts? We sell tickets. Tickets to barbecues, tickets for raffles, tickets for cars, tickets upon tickets upon tickets. So familiar we are with service clubs, we have tried and failed to remake Freemasonry into a convenient, predictable service club format. But it doesn't achieve the same outcome because it is not a social service club. Social clubs, after all, are a derivative of fraternal organizations like ours, based on an understanding our place in the universe. That was and is the point of Freemasonry. What has sales to do with sharing the inspiring story of science, art, and thought? Well, what if we showed the world our roots and let them harvest the fruit for themselves? Now, oh my goodness, before you, I burst into flames with this. A few qualifiers. Selling tickets. Collecting money. It's useful. It's useful. Is it essential? Well, not to the nature of Freemasonry. I'm sorry, but the charitable acts of Freemasonry have much more to do with the richness of the philosophical mind than they do with opening a wallet and handing it out to somebody in need. But if you were to ask how many of all of the Freemasons that you know have read the book, well, you can't possibly understand the philosophical nature of charity. There are different levels of charity, unless you study. So what's right and what's wrong? You tell me. Feels very wrong to be isolated, even though you've read the final chapter. So when we're working to develop the craft, I began to realize that we're addressing, that apparently we're addressing maybe 1% of Freemasons. We talk about things that have no relevance to new boys. We fill our halls with pictures of ghosts that are known to maybe 1%, if that, of the people in the room. I have to ask, wonder why. Just why. We'll be back. Take a run at that one. Meanwhile, this little Diana crawl, this is called Gentle Rain. And yeah, it is raining outside here.
And I will be your love. on my cheek they are warm, like the gentle wind. Come, you have me.
For a rainy day. We have a question to ask you. Something that I notice. We adorn our lodges and our valleys and our chapters. And I wonder why we are so shy about adorning them with symbols of great thinkers and great minds. The pillars of what we are today. In a sense, I think we don't cast our nets to go after the big fish. We want to personalize it. That the greatness around us is somebody that was a member of this, from our particular area, or known to us in the short term, perhaps a successful politician or a successful business person, somebody that had some element of success. Often it's material success. Funny that we don't seem to embrace the idea we seem to of masonry when we do that, and I've often thought that's odd. Why don't we do that? You know, why is that so difficult? Because if I'm trying to appeal to a broader audience, to the broadest audience, then I need to speak in the language that that the Greek philosophers taught us, this sense of the universal. It's not just my opinion or the king's opinion or the pope's opinion or the sheikh's opinion. It is the rightness, the notion that governs humanity, the great ideas. So what about that? Why are we so utterly shy of putting out there what we think are the great and significant attractors that define what we're about, what we strive for? Great minds discuss ideas. Average minds discuss events. Small minds discuss people. That came from Eleanor Roosevelt. And it's applicable here. It's applicable. Because that's, I think, a comment that our garters are showing, boys. I think that's quite a valid comment, an observation of Freemasonry. What are the great what are the great ideas that we struggle with? These are, we have great ideas, and then we have great people, the greatest people. So listen, here's what I have in mind. Now, which defines us collectively, the idea of Freemasonry, not your own backyard? And I'm a bit troubled by this. What defines, who would we define? I close my eyes and I want to be able to express and define Freemasonry to somebody walking past, looking through the glass in at what we are. What are we? And I think that we need to use art and the ideas that truly define Freemasonry, not our own backyards. We're pretty boring, you know. If that's all we've got, that's all you've got. Put up a picture of somebody that made a donation. Lovely man. But that's defining what? The application of Freemasonry? I don't think so. Here, people who made a difference run like this. Abraham Lincoln. He overcame so many setbacks to become one of the most influential Republican presidents. He inspired the nation with words and abolished the slavery. Benjamin Franklin, a polymath, a scientist, promoter of ideas that became known as American ideas. William Wilberforce, 1759 to 1833, he fought tirelessly to end the slave trade at a time when many accepted it as an economic necessity. He awakened the conscience of many people. And then if you're still thinking about, you know, what we see often referred to, Nelson Mandela. Now he's gone 3 years now. Campaigned for justice and freedom. And he represented an opposition to this cancer on the face of the earth, the apartheid. Albert Einstein, he was born in 1879. He died during my lifetime, died when I was 6 years old. His theories of relativity were a significant scientific breakthrough. And he was a champion of human rights. Campaign for a more peaceful world. Madame Curie, she was awarded a Nobel Prize for chemistry and physics. And her discoveries with radiation, though it cost her life, helped advance medical science. Amen. And they were even more remarkable at a time when few women gained education. And yes, boys, that's on us. Thomas Jefferson, Martin Luther King, how about William Shakespeare? He remains the king of English literature. His plays and poetry capture the diversity of human existence. And one of my favorites, born in 1452 and he died in 1519. He wasn't very old. One of the greatest minds in human history, can you guess? Painted the Mona Lisa. Greatest advances in anatomy and astronomy and physics and science, of course. Leonardo da Vinci. He was an innovator. He was born at a time when children were referred to as legitimate or illegitimate. His mother was a peasant woman. But when he was quite a little boy, he moved to Florence, where he entered the workshop of Verrocchio sculpture. And he learned. He listened and he learned. And then he was asked to do a little piece on one of the master's works. Just a little piece. You can still see it today. Do the research for yourself. He had to do a little piece that were a little bit of the robes, the folds in the robes. And when the master saw what his young apprentice had done, he put down his brush. Yeah, it was that good. Do we see a painting or any reference to that mind? That is greatness. That is greatness. It's greatness because of constraint. It's as I've heard the Canadian choreographer that's doing a new ballet referred to as doing ballet in a phone booth. That's where ingenuity takes over. All of that dynamic motion happening because of constraint forced the ingenuity. Mahatma Gandhi, he followed a philosophy of nonviolence and peaceful protest. And some of us cling to that notion, that hope. For bravery, do we acknowledge Winston Churchill? He inspired free nations to keep up a fight against tyranny. Or do you open your book of life and look at Socrates? He showed the power and integrity of independent thought. Now, this should speak very clearly, like the clarity of a bell to Freemasonry. He taught by encouraging people to honestly question their preconceptions, their conceits, if you will. His method of self-inquiry laid the foundations of Western philosophical thought. Galileo, well, we know what we all did to him. 1564 he was born and died in 1642. He made such strides in astronomy and helped to promote a heliocentric view of the world, despite coming in conflict with the prevailing religious orthodoxy. The orthodoxy made sure that the earth was the center of everything and everything circled around it. And yet this scientist discovered facts and was put on trial for it, of course. Or William Blake, to see a world in a grain of sand and a heaven in a wild flower, holding infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. What does your life include? Mozart, musical genius who gives joy to millions of people, hundreds of years after his birth. Or one of my favorite poets, John Keats, comes from my university days. He didn't live very long, but the intensity of his poetry, a thing of beauty is a joy forever. Yeah. You're right, John. Or Tolstoy. He wrote great epics about war and peace, included War and Peace. And his philosophy of nonviolence and a return to rural simplicity inspired such politicians as Gandhi. Or Sri Krishna, the revered Hindu spiritual teacher. He's responsible for the immortal dialogue contained in the Bhagavad Gita. Or Rumi, the Sufi poet. His mystical poetry has a universal... Or Charles Darwin. Or Martin Luther, most influential figure in the Reformation of the 16th century. He challenged the excesses of the Catholic Church. This led to the Protestant movement and forced the Catholic Church to reinvigorate itself. Or do you embrace Sir Isaac Newton or St. Francis of Assisi? Or where do you stop? Or Michelangelo referred to himself as a God's own artist. But in the case of Michelangelo, is pretty close. What's he leave behind? I don't know. The Pietà, the Sistine Chapel, the Statue of David. Amazing. Or are you more inclined to a little bit of a refined taste, like Raphael, the Renaissance painter, or Beethoven? Where does the list stop? Somebody that ran a successful business in our local town. I want to put those people out there and say, everybody will know when we surround ourselves with those reminders, those icons, that defines us. Well, I think what we're using to define us suggests that we are small-minded, suggests that we are a closed a group, an old boys club, if you will. There's no women amongst the icons that define Freemasonry. It's as if Hildegard of Bingen didn't exist. It's as if Madame Curie didn't exist. Who do you want to add to that? Bella Abzug, just list the great female women minds of our time that made a significant difference. I don't see any definitive artists being portrayed. Well, first we'd have to sit down and think about what and who the definitive artists of are and why. Well, this isn't a debate that you and I start. This is where we go to school. Do we put up a bust of Aristotle and then just leave it there? And do we put it next to a bust of Mozart or a bust of Charles Darwin or a bust of Isaac Newton or a bust of Confucius or a painting, a copy by Da Vinci or Michelangelo or Raphael or the work of Botticelli or a bit of the poetry of Keats? Do we adorn ourselves and then do we not suffer our own ignorance and display it repeatedly and embarrass ourselves, or at the worst define ourselves as something that we're not? We're not small-minded. We're not an old boys club. We're not walking checkbooks. Our actions, including the iconography that we use, defines our sense of leadership and who the true and utter leaders are. Well, we're an organization that is hungry, and begging for knowledge. And when that voice is not heard, those voices drift away alone as returning to where they come with the same answers, only with the same questions, only with an added disappointment that they knocked on the door of the lodge expecting that we would be able to deliver on the promise of the exception. The genius under constraint, the logic and reason. And I think that's utterly unfair to Freemasonry, that we continue that legacy. This isn't about time. This is about idea, thought. We need to be gentle and thoughtful with ourselves if we are going to succeed. Running our places as if these organizations of philosophy and insight, as if they're an ersatz business, is ridiculous. We would not be giving Mozart a venue to play in because it didn't fit the budget. We would just roll up his manuscripts and put them in the library and leave them. It matters. What I'm saying is it matters what we do with these wonderful and enlightened ideas. So don't come down on me. But you will. Ask yourself, what are you doing with those ideas? Truly, what have you done? What have we done? Don't put the burden on yourself. We're part of this together. This is an act of omission. And we collude in doing this. What we permit, we promote. Now, let's simply sit back and ask ourselves, is that Freemasonry? Well, I don't think anybody listening to this would say that it is. But you see the point I'm trying to get at? I'm not very good at it. I'm not very articulate. So the things that we do and put up around us that remind us of this greatness are invisible. It's like, it's very much a Masonic one-dimensional world that we walk through. Well, my goodness, I want to at least add a second, third, and fourth dimension to it so that it's an odd combination of ideas that makes us think, what is the common link? Do we need some, we don't need to be preachy about this. What is the commonness and what defines Freemasonry? And I'm not interested in, I've heard it. You know, if we ask three Masons a simple question, we'll get four answers. Well, four opinions. Let's just simply look at the facts as they are. Fact is, we're a philosophical organization applying our geometry to an understanding of the universe and our place in it. And yes, there is a spirituality to that. And yes, there is a sense of common good. And yes, we feel a compelling responsibility for those not as fortunate as us. We're not political, but we are political. We're not social, but we are social. We're not perfect, but we make it so hard. It's very, very hard. We are pushing the boulder up the mountain. We didn't give man fire. We don't need the gods punishing us. We don't. Get off our back. Here, listen to this. This will help. This will help a little bit. You're going to like this. This is Fragile by Jesse Cook and Sophie Melman. This was done live. Remarkable 2007 recording from Montreal. Not bad. No, that's Canadian. A woman, by the way. Love it. Just love it. Iconography, it's incredibly important. It reminds us a lot about our organization. When our organization is as dynamic as those ideas, they're essential ideas. I want to see Prometheus in the lodge. And I would go and visit your lodge or your valley. I want to see a cast of Prometheus. Or give me a mold of a sculpture by Nicholas Sebastian Adam from 1762 depicting Prometheus. Prometheus in Greek mythology was a deity who was said to have created mankind. And he was mankind's greatest benefactors. He stole fire from Mount Olympus and gave it to us. Boy, did that annoy the gods. So read a little bit about him. Find out what happened to Prometheus. There were a lot of very independent narratives that came out of that, from Homer and Pindar to Pythagoras. Now, that should cause a bit of a Masonic scurry. Always interesting. But this is like saying, there Chuck sitting at the end. Well, that's Chuck Darwin there, you know. And he's just a good old boy. And he pays his dues on time. Or Mike. You know, Mike's pretty handy. He's always sketching when in Lodge. But, you know, he doesn't say too much. But he's Socrates, well, he comes and goes. And he knows, you know, it's really interesting. He'd sit down with a watered-down glass of wine and spend a night. He's a fascinating guy, a wonderful personality. He could use a new suit, though. But if we had the great minds attend our lodge, what would the conversation be like? Would they be blotted out by people wanting to hear themselves talk or stretching a two-hour meeting out to 4 hours because, you know, they live around the block? That's what we've got going on. So everybody says that the evolution of Freemasonry depends on time. I say, no, it depends on ideas. What time does it take to introduce? Go and get a good series of busts and pick three to start with, or five, and put them on a decent plinth, huh? Please. Don't cheap out. Put them on a decent plinth. And get some copies of some real artwork. And for God's sake, keep barbershop quartet music away from me. Oh, gee, I'm sorry. It weakens me. How dare I? So the human voice for me is Pavarotti, sorry, or O'Sullivan. I'm taught that I hear God's voice in the ring of a bell. Every good Catholic will know that. The Hindi will teach me that when I look into the candle is the flame, is the symbol of purity. Reminder of God. When I light my candle, that's my acknowledgement, my commitment, my statement about my way of thinking. but you know already that I'm a deist. I'm not good with the supernatural. I just think that it's, life is not about the supernatural. Oh my goodness, it's so hard for many of us to be part of an organization that seems so constrained. Open up the tight fist. What time does it take to do that? You know, the time frame for all of this is the same amount of time it takes for the impression of your hand in a bucket of water to last while you quickly lift it out. That's how long I'll be remembered on this earth. I put my hand in that water and that displacement will fill in instantly. That's how much time it takes to create these essential ideas, to create and bring the ideas to life. Shame on us for turning our backs on arts and sciences, except to pay lip service to it, and we can't even defend our own position. It must be very hard for the artists amongst us, and the philosophers, and the laborer, and the farmer, and all of us who have been searching for the knowledge, the answers. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here today. I hope the point has been made. How do we answer? Is there such a thing as expansion? Well, that's like saying, yeah, I guess, you know, it's not the galaxies of the universe that are expanding. It's the space in between. There's lots of science around. Have some fun with it. My goodness. It's a beautiful world we live in. Here's a little stuff from 1939. Stuff I like, you can tell, and I think you did too. Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli. It's called Minor Swing. Commit those acts of Masonic kindness. Be generous with yourself. Be generous in spirit. And I look forward to being with you again real soon. Bye.
Musicians, it was formed the quintet of the Hot Club of France. Thank you.
The meaning of existence, oh my love.